from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on March 10th, 2008, when the New York Times broke a bombshell story about Democratic Governor Eliot Spitzer. The Times reported that Spitzer had patronized a high-priced prostitution service and met with $1,000-an-hour call girls. There had been a federal wiretap, lists of the governor's liaisons, and a bill for $80,000 to the governor for his prostitution habit. Why was this news? Well, it was more than just a marital affair. Spitzer was being investigated for suspicious money transfers, possible laundering, among other things. 2 days later, March 12, 2008, Governor Eliot Spitzer announced his resignation. It was a stunning and swift fall. But when it comes to covering scandal, it was hardly a first. That distinction might belong to the Gary Hart affair in mid-1987. Senator Gary Hart was the heavy favorite for the Democratic nomination for president, but an extramarital affair ended his campaign. And political reporter Matt Bai makes the case that this was the week that politics changed in this country. Before Senator Hart, he writes, the media tended to look away from sexual scandal. That was certainly the case for JFK and other presidents. If Gary Hart thought he had the same rules, he was wrong. And Hart has said this is bad for the country to have a political press obsessed with personal foibles. So this hour, let's talk about how we cover scandal, how we decide what's news and what isn't. And yes, you might recognize the theme music that we have this hour. It's the House of Cards theme music. Back on this past weekend, one of our favorite scandal shows, and we figured it was an appropriate entrance for the subjects this hour. Let me welcome our guests. In studio, we've got Gary Craig, a Democrat and Chronicle reporter, going back a number of years.
Yes, thanks for having me, Evan.
A few. Nice to see you back.
Yeah,
there,
just
Gary.
A couple.
You've
yes.
seen a few scandals in your day.
Yes, some we covered, some we didn't, but yes.
Dave Andriotta is also here, a Democrat and Chronicle columnist. Dave, nice to have you as well.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
And just as soon as I'll be able to hear it, I know we've got Karen DeWitt on the line from Albany. She is our WXXI Capitol Bureau Chief. And Karen, if you can hear me, I can't hear you, but I will say hello to Karen DeWitt.
Yes, I can hear you.
We get that locked in, well, hopefully it's just, maybe it's just one wire. You know, it's one of those things. So anyway, we'll figure
you.
This out, but I at least can hear Gary and Dave, and they're here. And I wanted to bring them in because I think it's an interesting question on the question of how we decide what's news and what's not, how we cover scandal, how we don't. And Gary, I know you now have had a chance to check out, I don't know if you read the whole book, Matt Bai's book. You did?
I probably have like 50 pages left.
Right,
it's an interesting read.
And his premise, I think, is that Gary Hart might have thought the rules were the same, that the JFK had a different set of rules 25 years prior, that the political press decided that sex, that personal scandals are essentially off limits. You think it's a fair premise?
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't really thought about it until actually reading the book. And when you follow, you know, Matt Bai's sort of the chronology that he lays out there, it's clear. And he, you know, he talks about what brought it to be was you had this kind of this convergence of entertainment news with politics hitting at that time. You had a much more mobile television world at that time. People could go anywhere and film. And, you know, that sort of set the stage for this. Reading the book, I it's hard to disagree with him that that's when the world changed. But similarly, my sense is also, had it not been Gary Hart, it would have been somebody within the next year. So it would have changed at some point.
Okay. So it was inevitable. And Dave Andriotta, do you get a sense that the media covers sexual scandal too much? In a moment, we're going to be able to hear Gary Hart's words about this. And he had a warning for the news media almost 30 years ago. Don't get obsessed with personal scandal. That stuff's out of bounds. You do that, no one will be eligible to run for president. How do you view it?
I disagree. I mean, if it's just a question of if it's really just about, you know, the skeletons in the closet in terms of who someone has slept with, I don't think that that's in bounds. But when it comes down to questions of character, I do think it's in bounds. You know, you asked earlier about what ought to be fair game. Look, if it's illegal, it's fair game. Kickbacks, bribery, corruption, this sort of thing, which is what was happening with Eliot Spitzer, then combined with the sexual dalliance as well. But I think there is room for exposing you know, a corrupt morality as well. If there's a politician espousing to uphold certain standards or a level of character, and they're found not to be doing that, I do think that that's fair game.
Yeah, I think every one of these cases, whether it's Eliot Spitzer, we're going to talk about Eric Massa, Christopher Lee. I feel like that one congressional seat just had a string of scandals, starting Randy Kuhl, Eric Massa, Christopher Lee, but everyone's a little bit different. I guess the question is, You know, when does it become relevant to the voter? And you're going to hear Cokie Roberts and Leslie Stahl, for example, disagree on what's relevant and what's not. So, Dave, so let me frame it this way. Is there anything that's out of bounds to you that is just not relevant?
It depends on the context. Yeah. I'd have to go through scenario by scenario to...
Here's why I think the answer has to be yes, because I would think, if we spoke off the record, not on the air right now, the three of us in this room know of a number of things that have happened among political leaders locally. And I'm not saying every single political leader. I don't want listeners to think, oh, everyone's got a scandal. But there are certainly things that I know that have never been publicized. And my guess is you have as well. And that probably means you've made a decision that it's not news.
Sure. And when you put it like that, I think you're exactly right. And there are things that are off limits. But it's because of the context of the race that we're talking about or the office that we're talking about, that whatever the naughty thing that this person did wasn't necessarily a reflection of the job that they're doing, their performance in office, and it wasn't necessarily a negative reflection on something that they're espousing to do, right? Like, you know, upholding some sort of moral standard.
Gary, does it change for you? Go ahead. Why don't you respond?
Well, no, I was going to say, I think if you look at some of the affairs, the liaisons that became news in the aftermath of Clinton, part of that, you know, some of those folks, they were getting hit for the hypocrisy. Some of the folks who were Clinton's biggest critics when, you know, their skeletons became unearthed. You know, had it not been for the stance they took during the Clinton scandal, perhaps that wouldn't have been news. But I think, as Dave said, it's such a case-by-case scenario.
Okay. Well, does the standard change the higher the office that we go? The closer you get to the White House, does it become more fair game for scrutiny, Gary?
I have to say I'm speaking on behalf of myself, but I would definitely say so. I would definitely say there's, you know, from whether it's, you know, town supervisor to state legislator to Congress to president, you know, there is kind of a fluid threshold, I would argue, as to what may be scandalous and what may not be.
Dave, does it change the higher you go?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think so. You know, we talked a little bit about Matt Bai talks about you know, the day the world changed, right?
Yep.
You know, the media changed, and there was a time where I think he points out, and I confess I've not read the entire book. I'm sort of just, you know, gutting it, but he points out at some point that one way to sure success for any reporter in generations past was to befriend politicians, was to sort of infiltrate their world and have that access to their insight. And after Watergate, the surest way to success became to be to expose a politician's hypocrisy.
Is that okay?
This is all I know.
Exactly. This is the world in which we live.
I've been in the business for almost 17 years now. So, seasoned veteran, but not as seasoned as others for sure. But that being said, it really is all I know, and it's the standard by which, I've practiced my work.
Gary,
and I have a few more years, but I've the whole sort of incestuous nature of politics and reporting sometimes has bothered me. I hate the White House Correspondents Association dinner. Even if it's funny, and I'll watch it all. But this night where everybody comes together and schmoozes and loves each other, to me, it's not so much whether it's the impression that the public gets when you're part of the same social circle in a way.
I actually agree with that. I've never been comfortable with that, and I feel like it does present an image to the public that is a little too cozy. Dave, do you disagree? Are you okay with it?
I having participated in one of those, I was a city hall reporter in New York for a couple of years. And so I was invited at the time to the Inner Circle dinners, which were the same thing. And it was kind of a two-way roast where half of the evening was the press roasting the administration. At this time, it was Bloomberg's administration. And then the Bloomberg's administration roasting the press. And I agree with you. I agree with Gary that it can look to the public that there's too cozy of a relationship. That said, I never really felt any love from the Bloomberg administration. I think most of the reporters didn't. And I don't think the Bloomberg administration felt a lot of love from most of the reporters that were covering him on a daily basis.
This is the difference. Dave is theatrically talented and I'm not, so he gets invited to these things.
We're talking to Gary Craig and Dave Andretta from the Democrat and Chronicle. We talk about how we're covering scandal. And for just a brief moment, I heard our engineer, Val LeBanc, in my ear, I think, or Megan, I think. I'm hearing something in my ear. I don't know if I'm hearing Karen DeWitt. Karen DeWitt is supposed to be on the line with us from Albany. And Karen, are you there?
I'm here.
If you're there, I can't hear her. No, can't hear her. Well, I'm hearing something. It's just not Karen. Maybe it's somebody from a different part of the building.
You know, there was, in return to the book, though, there was a lot of points he made, but one that I thought in particular was really sort of fascinating, given the world in which we live in right now at this moment, was how the change of the medium so much affects, obviously, the nature of the coverage. And you know, he talked about the Lincoln-Douglas debates, where they basically spoke in entire paragraphs. It was a print world. And then obviously you hit Nixon-Kennedy and the debates, which was this evolution to television. And then the Hart affair, which was still television, but it was a much more mobile, much more sort of kind of paparazzi in a way. And then now I was thinking, you take where we are with social media now. And there's a lot of good at social.
I'm certainly hearing something in my ear. I have no idea if that's getting on the air. I think I might be hearing the next studio over. I'm being told that what we're hearing in our ears, guys, is actually not getting on the program. Thank you to our listeners for kind of hanging in there with me. And now I'm going to go ahead and turn the volume down because I am hearing somebody. It's a scandal here.
It's a scandal,
here.
Yes.
It is here. So sorry about that interruption.
See, this is the NPR version of a scandal.
Right. Yes. This is as salacious as it gets. And public radio, this is as salacious as it gets, guys. But we're talking to Gary Craig and Dave Andreotta about how scandal is covered in the context of a presidential race and a political race and all the way down to, oh, there it is. Oh, I'm hearing WRUR. That's what it is. All right, very good. Now I know what I'm hearing in my ear. But I'm going to stop talking about that. I'm just going to turn it down. Sorry, our listeners. No, this goes back to the Gary Hart affair. There is a book by Matt Bai, All the Truth is Out. And there is a wonderful Radiolab episode. I don't know if you guys had a chance to listen. Radiolab essentially did an audio version of this story, of the week that politics might have changed. And they did a remarkable job of telling that story. I encourage everyone to check it out. It's called I Don't Have to Answer That, which was Gary Hart's answer. We've been talking about Gary Hart. It's probably important to go back and reframe exactly what that story was in 1987. He was almost certainly going to be the Democratic nominee for president. History tells us it's hard for any party to win the White House three times in a row, so Gary Hart was probably the favorite to be the president. He was a senator who had won, he had won New Hampshire, I think, in 1984. I think Mondale won Iowa, he won New Hampshire, and then Mondale cruised the rest of the way. But Gary Hart was kind of the heir apparent on the Democratic side, and then this came up. There was a reporter who got a tip that Gary Hart was having an affair. Her name was Donna Rice. They essentially kind of followed Gary Hart and down and were able to kind of corner him.
Refresh my memory, Evan. Was that after he dared the reporters to follow him? It was before.
Yes, that's a great backstory, actually. Yes. Right.
Yeah. Yes. Well, why don't you explain, Gary?
Well, it's interesting too, because a lot of what, and I admit, I'm one of these that the public remembers of this story, is actually wrong. And I remember it this way too. Was the belief is that he told the Miami Herald, "Follow me." Actually, what he had done was he had, in an earlier interview with the Washington Post, where they raised some of the question is about his fidelity. They said, "Well," he said, "follow me." The Herald set off and followed him. The Herald went to his place in D.C. that night without – that quote hadn't even yet appeared in print. And then the other part of it too, which again my memory was completely wrong on, was the infamous photo of Donna Rice on his lap on the aptly named Monkey Business appeared after he had dropped out of the presidential race.
Yeah, a lot of us connect that photo to, oh, that photo must have hit and then he was doomed. That photo came out after he was already out, right?
Yes.
But that's what we all remember.
Exactly.
Is Donna Rice sitting on his lap and with the shirt that said Monkey Business. And but anyway, the premise being that should the media have covered that? And then when Gary Hart finally addressed the media about it, he had some very pointed things to say. He said, first of all, he was questioned, do you think adultery is wrong? He said, yes. And then he was asked, have you ever committed adultery? And as you hear in the Radiolab episode, there's this pause. And then he says, I don't have to answer that. And, it was a defining moment. And then not long after that, he drops out of the race, but not before telling the press, you're starting to treat this like sports. Like team sports, winning and losing, covering it with the same sort of haphazard way. And there's a real danger to our our republic. And then one of my favorite parts is he closed by quoting Jefferson, but it turns out he quoted Jefferson incorrectly. He thought he was quoting Jefferson. The whole Jefferson, the famous Jefferson line, every country gets the government it deserves. Jefferson never said that. It turns out, according to Monticello, that was Joseph de Maistre who said that. Anyway, the bottom line is Gary Hart was lecturing the press, don't go down this road. Don't become the kind of press that destroys people, because otherwise the logical conclusion was, who is going to run for any office? And if you look back, should JFK have never been president? JFK probably would not have been president if the same standard to Gary Hart had applied to JFK.
But I don't think questions of character ought to be out of bounds.
I don't necessarily either. But let me at least ask you this then, Dave.
Yeah.
If that's the standard, and it cost us. I don't want to adjudicate the presidency of JFK before his assassination, whether he was on track to be one of the greatest ever or not. But the question is, should we eliminate people like that from the ranks of the people who might be president?
I think that is, and I'm going to sound like a politician now, but I think that's actually up to voters. But I don't think that it ought to be out of bounds for the press to report. I think it's worthwhile that for people to know these things and they can make their own conclusions. I mean, that's what happened with Bill Clinton and Jennifer Flowers in 1992, right? And we saw Hillary Clinton standing by her man, that sort of thing. That theme played out for several months during that campaign. And the voters decided that, you know, it was irrelevant when it came to his ability to perform in the White House. Then 7 years later, of course, Monica Lewinsky.
But again, this is where my history is getting fuzzy, though it is interesting that that happens just 5 years after Gary Hart, because Dave's right. You had Bill Clinton. You had all of these allegations right before New Hampshire. All of this is happening. He sits down with Hillary Clinton on 60 Minutes, I think, with Steve Croft. But what I don't remember, Dave and Gary, is was it that the public concluded, well, that's not important, or did they believe the story that, you know, that was overplayed, that Bill was being, that those were lies that were being published. I don't remember if the public concluded, well, we don't care about that extramarital affair, or if they didn't believe it to begin with. I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there's really a clear-cut answer to that. I don't know if there's ever polling about it that said, you know, which, obviously he wanted to be president, so there was a lack of concern on some part. But, you know, there was no shortage of, you know, if there's smoke, there's fire with Clinton before his election. I mean, there's no number of stories, no shortage of stories about him. So, I mean, personally, to me, it would have been hard to believe that all of that was false. I mean, I accepted some of it as true.
Yeah, I did too, and I think most people did. I think the difference between Gary Hart and the Clintons 5 years apart were that the Clintons addressed this very differently, and they acknowledged that people have problems. And that they were going to be open about this, at least to some extent, as open as the Clintons can get. But whereas Gary Hart tried to shut that down, I think maybe that was the difference at the time.
I recall the first scandal that came. Well, I guess we can call it a scandal. This is a good example of one of those times where the media has to decide how they want to cover things. I had to go back and look here because I was making this list and producer Megan Mack was helping me with the dates. I guess the Congressman Randy Cool, we go back to 2004. So I had only been in Rochester for a few years here. And Randy Cool was a Republican congressman from the 29th, I think, at the time, which is now the 25th. After some redistricting. But anyway, Randy Cool was running for, I think, re-election. And again, this is where my history gets a little fuzzy. He was running against a former Clinton and maybe Moynihan staffer, Samara Barand, at the time. And all of a sudden, some members of the media, me included, were mailed anonymously this file. And it was a divorce record. Now, those are supposed to be sealed in New York State. It was Randy Cool's divorce record. The reason I can talk about this now is it all became public. But at the time, there was this question on, is this news? Why did I get this? Well, you start reading through it, and what you saw was there were really, really strong allegations that led to cause for divorce. And as we know in this state, to achieve cause for divorce, there's a little bit, sometimes a higher bar. And so anyway, what I recall happening was that we had an internal discussion. Do we talk about the allegations contained in this sealed divorce record or not? Is this germane to the career of a congressman or not? So what we decided to do was we said, first of all, let's see if this ever got to the level of charges or police records. We talked to sheriffs down there. We talked to state police. Couldn't corroborate any actual charges. Then we got in touch with his ex-wife, who essentially said, we don't want, you know, I have no desire to see any of this dragged publicly. You know, we're divorced. It's over. It's done. That was more than 10 years ago, et cetera, et cetera. And so we had a lot of conversations. We decided we don't have enough, especially because in divorce files, I wouldn't want to read everybody's divorce file. There's probably things in there that are embellishments or exaggerations to help achieve cause. I'm not saying in the Kuhl's case that was the case, but I'm saying I didn't know. We didn't know. And we decided at Channel 13 at the time, we're not touching this. Well, I think 3 days later, everybody was out with it. And then all of a sudden you have that question, well, if everybody else is doing it, can we ignore it? Do we pretend it's not happening? And you had that awkward point in the middle. Do you remember any of that, Gary, with the
Red? Yeah, I mean, I wasn't involved in those talks, and I have to admit, I'm not sure at what point we picked up the story. I mean, your internal dialogue sounds very much like what we would have had,
right,
just from cases that I know of that I was involved with, but it sounds like a stance that we may well have taken similarly.
And we had listeners, we had viewers at the time who were saying, how, you know, after the fact, after all of this was out, how could you have not put this out there? How dare you? How dare you not inform the public? We had other viewers who were saying, that's his private divorce file. It's more than 10 years old. He's a member of Congress. He's being smeared for that reason. You know, why would you even do something like that? So we had it kind of back and forth, and that was a very, very difficult call. But ultimately, I think what we decided was, we didn't think it was germane enough, certainly not to lead with it. Then all of a sudden, the avalanche happened. And,
this was the Kuhl scandal, if you want to call it that, was before my time in Rochester. And I'd be curious to know from either of you, what prompted it in terms of the media coming out with it. Do you know who the first out of the gate was?
I don't remember who the first was.
Because I think Bai talks about this, about the difference between mainstream media, traditional media, and commentators, if you will. Talk show hosts, for example, yourself excluded, but I think the type of genre about here, where you can touch on innuendo and rumor, and that seems to be fair game in that world where it's not so much in newspapers or traditional television reporting.
I mean, I can talk about a recent one that was similar, if you'd like, where basically, just as you're saying, it became news because it went to not one of the talk radio shows here, but the talk radio. And it was a story that I think we were clearly aware of, and a lot of the other media were clearly aware of. And there had obviously been a decision. I'm talking about, I don't know if everybody remembers, when John Auberger was having a relationship with a woman who was then killed by her son. And when
John Auberger, who was
the Greasetown supervisor,
yeah,
and when the police went back and started going through the phone records of the victim, Ms. Neusatz, they found multiple calls, between the two. And they interviewed John Auberger. And we became aware of this later on, probably, I don't know, months or so. And basically, I mean, it's similar. And this wasn't one where there was somebody out there who, for political reasons or whatever, was putting it out there. We just happened to find out about it. But, and we went through lots of talks with different people and could really find nothing that basically, other than the fact he was questioned because he had a relationship with her, it wasn't as if he was suspect or anything like that. So, there was basically a decision made, okay, unless something different happens at this point in time, we're just, we're not going with this right yet. Doesn't mean we wouldn't later. And then what happens is, as I recall, one of the talk radio shows, somebody calls in and pretty much unfiltered puts it out there. Then Police Chief Todd Baxter calls the radio show to correct some of what had been said because it was presented inaccurately. And then it was out there. So,
right. And once it becomes out there, it becomes what people are talking about. And part of what we do is we're charged with having our finger on the pulse of our community. Sometimes we do a good job, sometimes we don't do such a good job. But when everybody's talking about something, it's pretty tough to ignore. And then you have to have these internal discussions about how to get into it.
And maybe that's another thing, and Bai, I think, touches on that. But maybe that's another thing that all of these different platforms of media has made it such that it's hard to ignore it. 50 years ago, if the news media had decided, okay, this is a sealed divorce file, I don't think we're going to touch it. That might have been it. Whereas now, somebody calls a talk radio show, or somebody puts up a blog post, somebody is on Twitter with it, and all of a sudden it starts to snowball, and then it becomes, can you ignore it, I guess.
I can't tell you how often nowadays in our newsroom, we have meetings in the morning, we talk about what the news of the day will be, who's covering what, and invariably, very often, something will come up, well, hey, have you guys heard about this? It's all over Facebook.
Yeah.
It's not, hey, it's all over talk radio, or hey, our competitors at Channel 13 have it,
and
or
that's
our competitors
not always
at WXXL,
a reason, by the way, is it, Dave? That's not always a reason. That's not ipso facto.
You mean always a reason to go and cover it?
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
Oh, absolutely not. And we make, I think mostly very, very responsible decisions as to what to cover. But every once in a while, you've got this momentum behind a quote unquote story that, is getting away from you until you address it somehow.
All right, we're talking to Gary Craig and Dave Andreotta. Let's get a short break amidst what has been, for me, always an enjoyable conversation with Gary and Dave from the Democrat and Chronicle. Unfortunately, couldn't get to Karen DeWitt in Albany just because of the odd sort of, it's the weirdest radio hour we've done yet. But I hope on the listening end, it sounds pretty good. I can't get to your phone calls yet because of all of this. We're kind of in a little echo chamber. But we are talking scandal. We're talking how the news media covers scandal. And we're talking about the decisions that reporters and newsrooms make when presented with certain information. Going all the way back to 1987, the year that political reporter Matt Bai, says everything changed with Gary Hart and that affair. Short break and more of the conversation next. Coming up in our second hour, we're talking about for-profit universities, not just Trump University, the nationwide industry that author Kevin Connell says has become a kind of cancer. He has some solutions, some proposals for a different kind of system. He's got a new book about for-profit universities. Author Kevin Connell in studio next hour.
James Corden has broken records for late night TV by buckling in pop stars and taking a drive.
You want to see the joy in people, and you want to see the person that always dreamt of being a star, you know?
Sing along with Stevie Wonder and Adele. It's Carpool Karaoke later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4. XXI. Hi, welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. You can hear me and I can hear you now. So if you want to call the program and tell us if you think the media does a good job covering scandal or what the considerations should be, if you want to weigh in on any of the various scandals we've seen, it's 844-295-TALK. Toll free 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. That is not an invitation to open the floodgates for salacious rumor. Dave Andreotta is not trolling for column material. He's got plenty. Dave Andreotta from the Democrat and Chronicle, Gary Craig from the Democrat and Chronicle are here. And what I'd like to do is, it's like now we can listen to some of the various, I think, moments of scandal. If you go back, well, let's start with this. I opened the hour with 2008. This is the former governor, Eliot Spitzer. It took 2 days to go from him being governor to him resigning with Silda Wall Spitzer by his side, if you remember. Eliot Spitzer talking about stepping down. This is in March 12th, 2008.
In the past few days, I've begun to atone for my private failings with my wife, Silda, my children, and my entire family. The remorse I feel will always be with me. Words cannot describe how grateful I am for the love and compassion they have shown me. From those to whom much is given, much is expected. I have been given much, the love of my family, the faith and trust of the people of New York, and the chance to lead the state. I am deeply sorry that I did not live up to what was expected of me.
That's Governor Eliot Spitzer, and I don't think there's any question that the media had to cover that one because there were allegations of law breaking from various forms. If I recall, they're transporting either laundered money or prostitutes across state lines and allegations of laundering, et cetera. The bottom line is that was a slam dunk. You had to cover that because of all of those reasons, and he was gone in 2 days. That was stunning to me. I don't know how much you guys remember.
Oh, I'm just cringing just listening to that. It was so
poor
uncomfortable.
Poor Silda by his side. I mean, that's just a terrible thing.
Who, by the way, from what I read now, is just doing great, and I'm so happy
for
her.
Well, good for her. Yeah, I hope she's doing wonderfully. She certainly deserves it. Then you had, we've talked about Randy Kuhl, who was followed by Eric Massa, a Democrat who beat him, a former Navy officer. And Eric Massa then resigns in scandal after a series of what I can only describe as bizarre allegations of part of the allegations were that he kind of preyed upon younger men on his staff. So of all things, he went on Fox News' Glenn Beck show in 2010 thinking, I don't know what he was thinking, but this is from that night where we're all wondering, what is he going to say to Glenn Beck here? This is Congressman Eric Massa talking about those bizarre allegations, only making it worse.
I went with a bridesmaid, danced with her, sat down. I went back to my staff, all the bachelors. They all made the remarks that you can imagine about you ought to do this, you ought to do that. I grabbed a guy, tussled his hair, no, I ought to do it to you. And there were other words, and they're all out there. I gave a full and complete disclosure. And I left because I realized the party was getting to a place that I shouldn't be at. And I did it. Now they're saying I groped a male staffer. Yeah, I did. Not only did I grope him, I tickled him until he couldn't breathe, and then four guys jumped on top of me. It was my 50th birthday. It was kill the old guy. You can take anything out of context.
Oh, that's so awkward to listen to.
It is.
Who's having a tickle party for their 50th birthday?
All he's lacking is jello, you know?
Doesn't matter if it was male or not. Young staffers. You're having a tickle party for your 50th birthday with young staffers. Anyway, that was Eric Massa, and that only made it worse, as you can imagine. We haven't seen much of him at all since those days. He was followed by Christopher Lee, and it didn't take that long for this to hit the evening news in Buffalo and Rochester. Chris Lee.
Former Congressman Chris Lee is not coming out of hiding yet. It's believed he's with his family tonight in Florida.
But we are learning much more about the woman whose personals ad led to the shirtless scandal that ended Lee's political career in a flash.
Okay, so this is the one I want to ask Gary and Dave about here, because I understood the previous two resignations. Chris Lee resigned after there was a picture of him taking a mirror selfie of himself flexing and sending it to another woman when he was married with a family. But in this case, Gary, could you have made the case that if he wanted that private, it could have stayed private? Did he have to resign? Was his story?
It's interesting because in my recollection of in our own newsroom, and I think I'm right on this, I believe one of the websites, I don't remember if it was TMZ or whatever, or I forgot which one perhaps, posted this first, I believe. I could be wrong in that. And of course, it was suddenly, you know, for what social media was in, it was still making the circuit pretty widely. And we, you know, was it? Probably him, sure. But, you know, could it have been somebody else photoshopped? Who knows? So we were like, okay, what do we do? We were like, let's see how this plays out. But obviously he then apologizes. I think it acknowledges it within the hour or so. So we knew. But it's an interesting question. What if he hadn't acknowledged it? What if he'd gone into hiding? How long can you hold onto that stance that, oh, we're going to be hands off here because of the avalanche of media coverage it was getting?
Yeah. And Gary's right. He could have put out a statement that says, this could be photoshopped. We have nothing else to say. And then what do you do with it? Dave Andreetta, what do you do with it?
Oh, ultimately, you'd have to press him on it. It doesn't look photoshopped. I'm actually looking at this photo right now because I hadn't seen it in quite some time.
I don't want to see it again.
I know. It's just horrible. I mean, it's the muscle flexing. It's kind of pitiful.
Oh, which way did the weight room?
Yeah.
That way.
No, you can't. He would have to say more than that.
But Dave, some people could argue that you don't have to ask him about that. Maybe his wife would, but you don't have to.
The internet is sort of this public domain. This is not something that was dropped in the mail to a reporter. This is something that was put out on the internet, I think by him, right? I mean, he answered some sort of Craigslist ad. I don't recall
I
this.
I think it
specifics.
Was a response to a personal or something, yes.
Yeah, it was a personal ad that he put this out there. I think it shows extremely poor judgment. And
so that's the relevance to you.
That's the relevance to
me. We're talking
to
judgment here.
Yeah.
A member of Congress who votes on war appropriations.
So what if he had just sent her a nice note, can we meet, and he doesn't put the photo of himself?
It would be easier for him to deny.
Okay, yes.
That would be a lot easier for him to deny. And then I think it would be difficult to track that down. I don't think the origin of this photo is that difficult to track down for anyone. And really, it becomes a matter of, like we just said, judgment.
All right, let me grab a couple of phone calls. Don in Rochester, first up. Go ahead, Don.
Well, a couple of points. I mean, a lot of what you're talking about is, you know, do we have the right to invade the personal lives of politicians just because they're politicians? But one of the things that you said earlier, one of you said earlier, is sort of troubling, and that was when you were talking about when to pick up a rumor. You know, if there's something that's put out on the internet, and I think you were talking about the former town supervisor in Greece, you know, when does it become news? Well, maybe it never becomes news. I mean, you know, every time I go to Wegmans, I sorely miss the racks not holding copies of my favorite tabloid, the World Weekly News, because, you know, we need to be updated on Bigfoot's whereabouts and Elvis sightings. And I think that the reason why it no longer exists is because the news networks, you know, mainstream news has, in a way, become more tabloidish. There's not a need to have, you know, outright tabloids anymore. And I think that's kind of sad. And, you know, maybe it's okay that people have poor judgment. People are people. Maybe we expect too much of our politicians.
Can I, since I mentioned the Greece supervisor, let me just expand on that a little, because I probably didn't give the full. I mean, we actually had a lot in hand, and we got more with the reporting, including the interview with him done by police. And to me, as somebody who covered the police chief of Greece, where former supervisor Allberger testified at length and didn't remember a lot, the interview with the police resonated with me because there was a lot of the same sort of I don't recall, and that. I mean, maybe I'm trying to justify the reporting of it, but that to me, the fact that there seemed to be this constant theme of an inability to remember where you were when and multiple times did become to me a question of judgment.
Yeah. And I think also it's important to point out, is Don still on the line?
Yeah, go ahead, Don. Don, stay there. Go ahead.
Yeah,
Dave.
I just wanted to say, I think it's important to point out, Don, that certainly not all, and in fact, I'd say the vast, vast majority of rumors don't become news.
I mean, that's the difficulty. You don't see what we don't report, and there's a lot that we filter out daily and weekly that you don't know about.
Exactly right. Go ahead, Don.
But you have to admit, recently, you know, and I mean recently, in the last like 20 years, news has really become entertainment and not strictly news. I mean, when I was in college, way back in the ancient days of the 80s, we had an actual class, you know, news as entertainment, and it was a debate about, you know, whether someone, you know, like a stalwart news anchor like Cronkite would consider the news then as entertainment. And it was, you know, much more of a conventional news story, you know, without any inflected, inferred opinions by the anchors on TV, you know, with extremely, objective reporting. And it's no longer that way.
Watch PBS NewsHour and BBC America.
Don, thanks for the phone call. Let me get Hal in Dansville. Go ahead, Hal.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
See, it seems like the topic is what I might call salacious scandal, and I was wondering if you could think of historic or epic events. For example, when... I'm trying to put together the modern presidential race without mentioning any names. And one of my questions as a young baby boomer who went to Germany and asked his German relatives, what did they do during the war? And I was trying to figure out how these horrific things could have happened. It happened later on when I learned a lot more. I saw that in the early 80s, I think it was, I was in Germany again, and they had this American TV series called The Holocaust, where this wonderful Berlin family was dramatized. You could Google it if you haven't seen it. And it was a multi-part TV series that I coincidentally saw in the U.S. and in Germany. But in Germany, they would show an hour of it, and then you have an hour or two discussion by really thoughtful journalists and academics and scholars. Now, in other words, the question I, you know, was sort of based on that Adolf Hitler was elected as chancellor in the early 30s in Germany. So, you know, I wondered, how could this possibly have happened? And so, of course, Adolf Hitler being the epic, historic, demonic evil person, if you like, of the 20th century. And yet, he never, when he was elected or running for election, proposed a final solution, this horrible, horrible, unbelievably war crime and more. So I'm wondering why there isn't more journalism, where we're now seeing discussions of basically imprisoning huge numbers of people and basically violating the Third Geneva Convention again, as Jane Mayer in her book.
Hal, are you saying we're focused on the stuff that doesn't matter when we should be focused on
things, you know, that matter?
Things that matter.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. In other words, not salacious scandal, but really, really fundamental American versus hopefully not American values.
Yeah, Hal, thanks for the phone call. It's an interesting question, and my guess is most journalists would tell you that we can walk and chew gum at the same time, that we can cover scandal where it's news or appropriate, but you can also cover possible war crimes, et cetera.
I would argue that those things that he's talking about, the really big, important events and scandals, are being covered. They just simply are not getting as talked about as much on the street as some of the more salacious things.
So, I think he's probably going to say, Dave, we have a presidential candidate who has basically said that when I'm commander-in-chief, I will tell our military to commit war crimes.
Right, right. He
backed off of that within 24 hours, right. But that doesn't get the same amount of coverage as his comments about his genitals, things like that. And why doesn't it? That is a fair question.
You know, I'm not sure, though, if this era is any – well, it's different in that it's a very crass conversation in the political debates, which is kind of a whole new level. But I'm not sure – if it's vastly different than it might have been in other eras with the media coverage of what might – I mean, obviously now you have this sort of whirlwind of social media that takes everything and exacerbates everything of that nature, becomes the conversation piece. But, you know, if you go back to penny press times or any others, you know, the political coverage could still be a little horse racy too.
But do you think that comment about the about war crimes as opposed to his manhood got more – play in the mainstream media? I mean, I don't know. I've not really kind of done a look at the clips and did a count. But I wonder if it's just simply more people talking about it. Like, what is media? We're going to go off on a tangent here about what is media. But social media, Twitter, Facebook, there are more people talking about that, the genitals comment, than as opposed to the war crimes
comment.
Sure. But I'm not sure if the actual mainstream press dedicated more space to it. I don't know.
And maybe the issue is people haven't taken him seriously, but I think that's starting to change. Let me get to John in Rochester, because before I do that, let me hit two very different sides of this. Our listeners are kind of split on this. Here is Jackie in Fairport, who writes, "Evan, regarding coverage of infidelity during elections, what about the notion that in order to carry on an affair, a person has to engage in a pattern of deceit? Don't voters need to know about this capability or propensity?" That's from Jackie, who basically says it's germane because if you can deceive people in your personal life, you can probably deceive people in other parts of your life. And
it's a good point.
And Cokie Roberts has, on that Radiolab episode, which I encourage you to listen to, about the Gary Hart affair. I want to listen to what Cokie Roberts had to say about this. This is why she said she does think everything is in play. This is Cokie Roberts.
Look, we elect our presidents based on who they are, not on what policies they stand for. It's different from any other office. The voters need to know as much as they can humanly know about that person.
So is there a line for you? Is there a place you won't go in taking the full measure of a candidate?
I not for president that I can think of.
That's Cokie Roberts. Now, her colleague Leslie Stahl, longtime CBS News correspondent, takes a different view. This is Leslie Stahl in that same program offering a different take.
Sex is really a hard place for me to pry. So I agree with it, but I also have my own opinion that there's propriety. And I'm old-fashioned, I guess. Am I? I don't know.
That's Leslie Stahl having a much more difficult time of saying everything's in play here. And let me get John in Rochester, who wants to weigh in on what we cover. Go ahead, John.
Hi. Thank you. My opinion is that all those specific scandals that you mentioned with all these politicians, while they might have exhibited bad judgments, certainly might have been embarrassing for them, and certainly you can make fun of them sitting at a bar or around the dinner table, but I don't think any of them rise to the level of having them lose their jobs. I think we live in a strange culture now where people, there's always this huge cry for people to resign and to lose their jobs, and it's just very strange to me. I think that while you can certainly say, again, they did exhibit bad judgment, I don't know that's an indicator that they're going to perform their job in a dishonest way or that they're not capable. I just think it's a strange cultural shift that we're having, and it kind of bothers me.
John, thanks for the phone call. And we're hearing that from a number of listeners as well here, that, okay, it's problematic, but does this mean they should be out of office? Does this mean that if they've been doing a good job in public service, they should be gone? I would say to John and some others, not every scandal results in resignation.
Matt Bayh actually makes a point in the book that post-Hart, there's been this sort of evolution where, and Dave was talking about the Clintons kind of getting out in front of it and doing the 60 Minutes interview and all, where if you kind of honestly basically say what you've done in your life in these instances, that the public can be very forgiving and accepting.
I think they can. I mean, I think he's right. Don't you think, Gary?
Oh, no. I think, yeah, he makes a point. I have to admit, these things are tough, the sex scandal, because I'm a person that, like, I will find out people that work in our newsroom are getting married and I didn't even know they were dating. So I'm not very good at gossip. So it's hard for me to sort of – but he does make a good point. And I think that's sort of the whole issue that puts forth is – how good of a president could Gary Hart have been had this not happened to him? If you look at the issues he was talking about a number of issues that were very prescient and are very, very important to us today, and he was way ahead of the curve.
David K. Johnston, who's listening to the program, sends me a note just to follow up on the comments from Don. He says, based on Hal and Danville's comments. David writes, German television had those discussions because German law imposes public service requirements. American law imposes no such obligation on broadcasters. That's the problem. I was not aware of that. Thanks there to David K. Johnston. And Teresa writes, Evan, I read the book by Matt Bayh. It's excellent. And I just want to add that another factor in the Gary Hart scandal was a little thing called the fax machine. It changed journalism with the increased speed at which stories broke and subsequently the level of interest in them. Gary Hart was of the old school of politics, expecting more coverage of the important things and less or none of what had always been considered private. So Teresa pushing back a little bit there on what's important and what's not.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that I'd agree with what Cokie Roberts
yeah.
said, where we elect presidents for who they are, not because of their policies. I think there's a mix.
I don't think we should just give up and say it's only because of who they are.
But that's what she is suggesting. Right. And I think that's going a little too far.
I think there's
a good mix.
I agree. Yeah.
I think if you take the 92 race, we're talking about the talk about Clinton and all that was suspected or known about him beforehand. I mean, you could make the argument that the economy and not Clinton's peccadilloes were the thing that got him elected that year. Well, yeah. Obviously, his peccadilloes didn't get him elected. We know that.
Yes. Andrew and Irondequoit, against my better judgment, I'm going to squeeze in one more call. Make it tight. Go ahead.
Okay. I just think that John was right about the thing, except for Elliot Spitzer. He had to quit because if you played his resignation statement, he said in between the lines, I can't throw guys in jail for doing what I did on Monday and then do what I do on Tuesday. If you go back and listen to the whole statement, you'll see that it was in between the lines he was saying, I can't hold this job because of that.
Andrew, I think that's exactly right. I think and there are certain cases where, you know, for example, if you have been a family values person, you know, the purity of the family, if you campaign against same-sex marriage and then you are found to have had a gay affair, I think you're probably done and probably deservedly so. And that's happened. Whereas, if the circumstances are different, maybe the public reaction is different.
Then look what happened to Anthony Weiner, right? He wasn't standing on that moral high ground during his time in office. He lied. He initially lied.
Hold on, Dave. He lied.
Yeah.
And then he tried to admit it, but then he lied during that.
Oh, I know.
And then he lied again.
Then he made a comeback claiming that he wasn't doing this anymore, and he was.
And he was.
I mean, there were all kinds of problems with that. But I'm just saying, when it comes to resignations, I mean, he was one of those guys that could have arguably attempted to weather this storm. And you know, he resigned on his own accord too.
Well, and I'll close the hour. JB sends us a note that says, "Is there a demonstrable link between sexual misconduct and public office and financial misconduct? Are all indiscretions by public officials equal? Did such misconduct demonstrably compromise performance of the duties of public office?" I don't know that there's been enough of a study or an indication that we know the answer to that. I don't know. But I think the media does its best job to decide what's relevant and what's not. And I would just add, I know we've said it a few times, even though some people are listening to this program thinking, well, Dave and Gary, especially you, Dave, everything's in play.
Right.
No, there's a lot in this town that has never been printed, that probably could be, that hasn't been. And I know that discretion is a big part of what Gary Craig and Dave Andreotta do. So our thanks to them for their time this hour. Thank you, Gary Craig. A lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks, Evan. This was great.
And Dave Andreotta, thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for all the great comments and et cetera. A little House of Cards music to play us out. More Connections next.